Hello, and welcome to our special series of Green Elephant interviews during March 2021, supporting the annual B Corps Month. B Corporations, or B Corps for short, are businesses that meet the highest standards of verified social and environmental performance, public transparency, and legal accountability to balance profit and purpose. Throughout March, we are chatting with key people in companies which have chosen to certify as B Corps and become a force for good. I've been joined today by Debbie Luffman from Finisterre. Based in Cornwall in the UK, Finisterre was born in 2003 from the needs of British cold water surfers. And it is pretty cold. They build the best and most sustainable outdoor apparel for those that share a love of the sea. So basically stuff that keeps you warm and dry. They've been a certified B Corporation for 3 years and have just hit the button on their recertification process. Debbie heads up the supply chain, design and development of all Finisterre product. Passionate about low impact textiles, unraveling supply chains and understanding the language of our community, Debbie seeks positive change and solutions to the ginormous challenges which face the fashion industry and the future well-being of our world. Welcome to the Green Elephant Show, Debbie.
Thank you for having me. Wow, you make me sound like I do an awful lot. Wow.
don't tear it down. So I mean, I mentioned the ginormous problems of the fashion industry. What are these problems that we have?
I mean, there's a huge amount to talk about.
Of course, yeah.
I think in terms of really just at the sort of the consumer side, really, it's the promotion of overconsumption. The fact that it's very much saying that you need these things. You know that it's. I think it's the. It's not. It's not that it's. You need a new coat because it's raining. It's actually that you need this life and you need this constantly, this newness, this sort of perpetual cycle of newness that is required, that is put out by the fashion system, is completely out of kilter with our ecosystem, you know, with the issues facing the planet. It is quite frankly unsustainable and is broken and has to change. So you know, there's so much wrong with it, and just the fact of trend, you know, the idea of trend, that you're constantly outdating your wardrobe or your gadgets are constantly obsolete, you know, it's unsustainable. It has to change, and you know, and there are lots of signs of life as well. I think that's something to say as well, that consumers are looking for that to change as well. It just feels irrelevant, you know. It doesn't feel right at the moment.
It's had quite a bad, there's been a lot of bad news stories about sweatshops, child labour, you know, make sure you pay these children to make your T-shirts in wherever it might be. Mm-hmm. That's obviously supply chains, which you must have to manage in some detail yourselves. What's the problems there? What kind of problems do you face with your supply chain?
I mean, really, it's just it's the distance is the biggest problem. You know, you can't. It's not the same as just being able to sort of pop round and have a chat. And you know, so I mean, the distance is probably the biggest issue, which then requires you know, a huge amount of trust and relationship building. And I think that's often lost.
Yes.
With you know, the idea of the fashion system, that you're always just sort of jumping just for the next sort of cheapest place or the, you know, next opportunity within the supply chain. It doesn't give you time to build up and evolve and improve your product and involve your understanding of the factory and the people that work there. So that's a really big part of it, I would say. I knew that would happen. a really, really big part of it is that relationship builds.
Well, the joys of 2020-2021, isn't it?
Exactly. I didn't realise it was 2021, homeschooling. Yes, so the building of relationships is absolutely required. But I think one thing that's worth saying is when we embarked at Finisterre, we were very anti-certifications, actually, if I'm honest with you.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
It was really like, you've got to go and visit the suppliers, you've got to shake hands, you've got to get to know them. And I stand by the same thing, you know, absolutely, that is absolutely paramount and key. You need to treat your supply chain as one, you know, very crucial part of your team that sit at the end of the desk, particularly now we're all working virtually, you know, they're in the same boat as all of us. However, what I would say is, as the range, the team, and the supply chain has grown. There comes a point where that's not good enough, and actually you need fact checking, and you need transparency, yes. And you need to know the origins of your sources. So I would say that it's not a challenge of the supply chain. I would say it's a requirement of the supply chain now, that you need people that will work in that transparent way and ask a million questions and get a million.
Yeah, answers. good old due diligence, as it's lovingly called. I think it's fascinating. You look at the fashion industry has been built around, the shows in Paris or in Milan or in New York and London and the fashion show weeks and what's the new color and what's the new look and feel. Is the consumer changing? Is the consumer, because 2020 must have shot the fashion industry in the, well, somewhere. I was going to say in the arse. I'll say that.
You said it all. I think it was changing. I think 2020 was just the year of acceleration from in all sectors, really. You know, that retail was changing, consumer was changing, lifestyles were changing. There was a huge amount that was beginning to shift. And I think what happened in 2020 is just that, we really caught up on several years. And whilst obviously, COVID has been, dreadful, it's also created opportunities. People have slowed down. I think there's a slower pace of life, and that sort of need for constant newness and sort of going out gear or Instagrammable clothing or whatever. It was already nonsensical. It was already pretty nonsensical, but actually it just looked ridiculous in 2020, didn't it? The idea that anybody would be buying any of that sort of, that clothing or those products during that year just made people really second, to think deeper. Actually, people's pursuits were different, their lifestyles. People, are only able to go outdoors for a walk. So I think people have really engaged more with the outdoors and hopefully more with their families. And it's been really, really tough. But actually, I think that shift really in terms of what people want out of their gear has been more, comfort, more functional. People are going for a run, they're going to need certain clothing, as opposed to just having the latest looks or the latest colors or the latest prints. The people who go to these trade shows, some of that, it was so out of date anyway, quite frankly. It's very much built on aesthetic. So it's sort of, what do all the fabrics look like? Yeah. Not what do they do, where do they come from, and what's their impact? It's just millions of bits of fabric, so.
And how long they will last. I mean, the speed, the fashion industry created, because they needed the speed to turn around and buy new stuff just doesn't wash 50 times or whatever. I mentioned in your intro about low impact textiles. What are low impact textiles?
Well, unfortunately, it's not a particularly straightforward question, I suppose, in that respect. So what I do think, if you dissect the word low impact, actually, I think impact is a really interesting word. It's something that we set a lot of stall in terms of the word sustainability. It's not a sort of coverall. It doesn't really work in many cases. So saying that, a sustainable car, is a bit of an oxymoron.
Yeah.
So actually impact by saying, okay, if you are making products, you are making impact. That's just the surety. So then it's just at what level is that impact? And obviously, we are targeting, eventually we'd like to have a positive impact, but the minimal impact that we can make.
Yeah.
And so then you're looking for something like a natural fiber that is agriculturally grown. You'll be looking for the least amount of water and irrigation and pesticides that can be used, so the impact on the land, and on which in turn is on human health, so soil health, human health. If you're looking at a synthetic, using a virgin polyester, a fossil fuel, obviously that's unsustainable, and it's high impact from carbon toxicity.
Yeah.
So you're looking always, okay, what are the options then? So you're looking for recycling, or you're looking for a bio alternative. And it's really a sort of quite a holistic process of what's the right fabric and the fiber. So if you're making a waterproof jacket or a wetsuit, you don't want it to be made out of hemp. you know, so it's not as simple as always go for, you know, the lowest water, whatever. So low impact is really just an assessment of what's the right material and fibre for the job and what is the lowest impact we can find, what is the lowest impact fibre that is available to us.
I mean, that's quite interesting because so often we've mentioned on the Green Elephant Show and other episodes that, you know, everything's about CO2, everything's about the carbon footprint, and it's not all about the carbon footprint sometimes. Sometimes it might be the welfare of the individuals that are making the product or the farmers that are farming it in whatever way. That impact is far more complex than simple CO2.
It's incredibly complex. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why it can be quite difficult for people to understand and engage with, and why greenwashing is really not helping, because it's just adding to that layer of confusion. You know, people want, you know, I think that's one of the issues that sort of it's media, you know, and humans, we want that kind of digestible strap line for something. But actually this stuff is really, really complex, and ultimately it is about just saying, how can we make, you know, be in the business of business with having the least impact possible on the environment, but also having a positive impact on humans, you know, on our world and on our well-being. That's really the way that we look at it, is our sort of assessment is very much on impact, and it's, you know, targeting that zero impact and a positive human impact.
Or positive human impact. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. It kind of brings me on to what one, you just received an award from the Gold ISPO Outstanding Award for Insulation Apparel for your BioSmock product, perhaps. And that's a natural, based on a natural product. Can you tell me more about that?
So Finisterre make an awful lot of insulation products. It's really our sort of famous for gear. We get a lot of weather in Cornwall.
That's what we call it, is it?
We get it all, you know, straight off the Atlantic. So it's a really, really good testing ground for us. And our insulation products is that, you know, it's our real go-to sort of our best-selling gear.
Yeah.
And we fill it, so we use a recycled polyester outer and a recycled polyester fill. And we're always looking for other alternatives, again, back to targeting that low impact. How can we make it better?
How can we reduce impact?
You know, wool is a fiber that Finisterre have a huge, deep love affair, actually, with wool. We always have had. As you said in the intro, you know, we were born from cold water surfing is very much the roots of the brand. Our offices overlook the sea, and you know, it's our playground, it's our testing ground, it's our source of inspiration, it's everything. And actually wool, very early on in the development of our first products at Finisterre, we realized quite quickly that wool was just brilliant for when you get out of the sea, this from so many different angles, you know, in terms of from a performance point of view. It's a technical fiber. You know, if you listed all the properties of wool, it looks like some, you know, space age new sort of technical, you know, fiber that's been developed in the lab, and it's off a sheep's back. You know, it's amazing. So technically it works really well. I think emotionally it works really well in terms of how the softness and you know, the warmth and how it makes you feel. I think it takes us back to, you know, being a child and blankets. You know, it's got this incredible warmth, tactile nature to it. So, you know, we've always been drawn to wool, and we use wool in our jeans, we use wool in our insulation of our jackets. We're kind of like, how can we get wool into our range? And so we've been working with HD Wool, who are the wool insulation providers of the BioSmock fill. We've been working with them for several years, in fact, but we've sort of got to a really good sort of groove, I suppose, with them, in that we knew that it was a great insulation inner fabric, but from an outer point of view, synthetic is just, you know, what people love to hate on plastic for obvious reasons, but actually one of the reasons why our world is just, you know, so full of plastic is because it's just such an amazing, you know, material. It's incredibly
it's very clever,
durable, versatile, and if you're using it in an outdoor setting, it's incredibly long lasting, waterproof, weatherproof, you know, it's just, yeah, it's amazing. So so the conundrum was, well, we've got the fill, great, but it's a shame to wrap it in plastic. And so this led us with the BioSmock to be working with Amateris, who are one of our Asian fabric manufacturers. And they have developed, working with Primaloft Bio, a recycled polyester yarn, which naturally will biodegrade in both sea and land. And that might sound easy, but believe me, not.
If it was easy, it would have been done a long time ago.
Ridiculously hard, you know, and I mean, I could go on forever about, you know, things that are sort of claiming to be degradable, biodegradable, compostable, and it being plastic. It's extremely unusual, where you get the biological world and the synthetic world kind of coming together. So yeah, this was really the holy grail to create a product, an insulation garment, which at the end of its natural life, whether it's in landfill or it's microfibers, it will naturally biodegrade to a non-toxic biomass in both land and sea. So it's, you know, from a technical point of view, it ticks every box, but from an environmental and impact point of view, it's really considered sort of, you know, 360.
Well, no, that's brilliant. And I know, good reason why it won the award then, as far as I can work out, and congratulations on that. Obviously we said a couple of times that and many people can be envious of the views of the seas and the rivers that you and I have in Cornwall, the company grew out of the surfing community, and funnily enough, I was speaking to Matt Hocking from Leap about surfing and the impact of boards, but I'll leave you to listen to the episode to learn about what that was. But the wetsuit is a challenge, isn't it? Because the average surfer says he or she has two and probably has five, because the rest are in the garage or in the shed or something. What's the problem with neoprene and other products?
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, what you've described there, it's the perfect tension, actually, because people who want to buy wetsuits, and I don't just mean the one that you buy once a year for your sort of your holiday, but actually, you know, people who are sort of within the coastal community who are in and out of the sea, you need a good wetsuit or several good wetsuits, and the better the wetsuit, you know, potentially the worse it is, because, you know, the thicker it is and the longer lasting it is. So it's this perfect tension that, you know, you want to be in the natural environment for your well-being and for your peace of mind. Everything about that is a positive thing for humans to do. But unfortunately, the material choice of neoprene is pretty hideous. It's incredibly, incredibly toxic. Blown fiber. So the glues alone, you know, that are used to laminate the different composite materials within neoprene. It's in terms of it's a fossil fuel, you know, so it's not a renewable source. There is no end of life. You know, at the end of it will not biodegrade and land on sea or in your garage floor, where a lot of them will be left. You know, they will break up into in macro particles and then micro particles at the end of their life. But yeah, they're pretty disgusting, toxic things, quite frankly, but life preserving for those of us that love going in the sea.
Yeah, but out of that massive amount of 300, the estimate of 380 tons of neoprene that's sitting is that per year into landfill? I can't remember. Each year in the UK, a massive amount. So you've got done a campaign for a recycled surf suit.
There's sort of two parts of that. So first and formally we've changed, so we're not using neoprene, so we've moved to Ulex. So we're now fully Ulex, so that is a natural rubber, so it's a renewable source. Also, from carbon point of view, it's, you know, they're like chalk and cheese, actually, if you compare Ulex and neoprene. So it's naturally derived rubber, so vastly less impactful resource at the beginning, You still need to use to bond with polyester. So we've moved to only recycled polyester as well. So, you know, they're incremental. Again, this is the beast with low impact. There's always going to be an impact, but it's about reducing that impact. But for us, the holy grail is making wetsuits from wetsuits. So we employed the first wetsuit recycler in the world, in fact, to basically this conundrum, you know, gave the conundrum and said, how can we create wetsuits from wetsuits? And it's the materials are the way that they are bonded, where they're created and then bonded together in such a way they don't want to be taken apart. You know, they're not meant to be recycled. So it's a huge challenge, but one that we've undertaken. It's one of those things we almost wish we hadn't started, because it's just, you know, such a challenge. But we're nearly there, actually. So we've, in terms of changing the fabrics and materials that are used, as well as the glues, and then the end of life, the breakdown into new feedstock of Ulex, we're probably about another 2 years away from a commercial suit. Okay. But we're getting closer. But that's the aim of the game, as well as wetsuits. That's across the full product range. So we're looking to, you know, make beanies from jeans and t-shirts from jumpers. You know, it's very much that circular approach, and it's you know, a lot of people want to do that. It's definitely something which is growing in the industry. But it's hard.
Difficult, and it requires
a lot of collaboration, which is really starting to come through, actually. So
kind of dismantling it. I looked at neoprene and read a few facts on it. I hadn't really thought about it. I'm not a surfer. I sit some of the best surf in the world just over the road. It is a brilliant product, and essentially you're taking that and going, it's brilliant, but it's devastating to the environment. So something that's grown up over many, many years and suddenly got to be dismantled and done in no time. It's just not possible. So yeah, I think I can appreciate why it's a slow improvement. Turning the focus to 2000, whenever you became a B Corp, started moving to B Corp. What attracted you to the B Corp movement?
Yeah, I think what really attracted us was the fact that it really wasn't just sort of looking through the lens of it sort of one part of your business. So it wasn't about saying, you know, I suppose sort of greening your material use or your products, or it wasn't, you know, like hang tags of Fair Trade or GOPS or Blue Sign, or it wasn't sort of like a badge collection job. And it wasn't, because at the end of the day, you could make low impact, sustainably sourced products, but you could treat your staff, you know, horrendously and your supply chain disgustingly, couldn't you? You know, so you can't, there's no sort of the sustainable, doesn't necessarily do there. This was about really doing, you know, rethinking business, thinking, you know, we spend so much time at work, don't we? So actually we didn't want to just create and grow Finisterre as a, you know, just a sort of a, you know, a 9-to-5. So it's about creating an environment where people really, you know, want to come to work, gets, you know, it's about a culture, really strong culture and well-being, which really Finisterre, you know, was built on. In the DNA of Finisterre, we were born, somebody described as we were born good, which is a difficult legacy. But in terms of, you know, we wanted to radically, you know, change the world and to shake up the industry from day one. So it's not like we had to sort of backtrack and try and do better. But as you grow as a business, that's not good enough. You know, as you go from being, you know, a couple of people to a medium business, actually you need structure and you need to constantly improve. You can't rest on your laurels. What B Corp does is really provide that brilliant 360 of, you know, well that's great that you've got these your materials there, but what about your governance and what about your community? What are you doing there? You know, so again, I refer to the word impact, and it's really what's your impact at every level of, you know, what's your interaction with your local community, your wider community, your social media community, your supply chain. What do you make? How do you make it? And it's always striving to be better. That's the thing with B Corp. It gets harder and harder every time, quite rightly. So yeah, I think that's what really drew us to it, was that holistic approach to using business as a force for good.
Yeah, and what can you say? Perhaps you were born good, but all can always get better. Maybe that's the line you should do.
yeah, absolutely.
So you've been through the certification in 2018, and then you've gone through this recertification process. Those you've already said were difficult, but they were different?
Yeah, I would say they were different, actually. I don't know enough about B Corp to know whether that's going from your first to your second, but I would say it's more that the sort of the environmental agenda has changed a lot in the last couple of years, and socially, you know. So actually, the questions this time round were tougher, I would say, in terms of so carbon played a bigger part in it. So you know, the race to zero.
Yeah.
As from a cultural and social point of view, a lot more focus on diversity and inclusion. Which I don't remember as much in the first. So, you know, I think it's the reflection of what is happening globally and nationally definitely colours the B Corp recertification process, quite rightly.
Yeah.
So it evolves and it moves, but I would say it's definitely tougher. That would be my my warning to anybody that's watching it that wants to do this. Do it. It's absolutely incredibly worth doing, but it's very, very tough. And that's great. You know, it should be tough because it should be, you know, targeting the best of the best.
Yeah. And I mean, I suppose that what do you value about being a B Corp, or what do you value about the B Corp movement then, as a company and yourself maybe?
I mean, I think, you know, like personally, you know, I live in Cornwall. As you know, it's an incredibly beautiful, inspirational place. But it can be quite insular, you know. You can feel, particularly in the winter months, you can feel a very long way away from the rest of the world at times. You know, I'm not from here, my origin. So I think what being part of B Corp does is very much community. So it's you're part of something bigger, and you're part of something where, you know, there's going to be, so what we might know about packaging or about wool could be incredibly vitally useful to somebody else in the B Corp community in a completely different sector. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, the outdoor clothing sector. And that's what's so rich about B Corp, that you can share and bounce ideas, you know, across the community. And you can do it feeling it's a sort of a safe space of like-minded, like-valued people. It's a screening process in a way. Just checking this, you know, no dickheads here. I think for me, it's that community collaboration, you know, that sort of we're in this together and we're trying to do something, you know, we're going to get to something bigger and better faster if we do it together. You know,
yeah. And one thing I found in talking to one of your team members, Adele, is that, you know, her recommendation is I go talk to some of what would apparently be your competitors. Because they're in the same space, but we work together, and it's quite an interesting community to be in, really. And quite enjoyable, because you don't feel like you're constantly on the defense or trying to hide something. Transparency being the game.
Absolutely.
Okay, so thank you for all that. I also asked whether you had a tip that you could share with our herd of listeners. What tip would you give people to do?
I mean, it's a really simple one. But I think in terms of, you know, if you want to, you know, if you're interested in protecting the environment, you want to make a change, particularly towards net zero climate change, you know, it's a really obvious one. But I've certainly been doing it through lockdown, which is just making sure you go outside every single day and engage with the natural world, and have an awareness of the natural world. If you don't know your natural environment, it's very unlikely you're going to be driven to protect it. So having that connection, you know, the the well-being that you get, you know, from being within nature and with you know, on your stress levels, it helps you sleep. There's so much to be gained by it. And I think if you then combine that with trying to reduce your impact, you know, the amount of times that you might take a short car journey where you could walk, you know, you could cycle and you could take the kids with you and just reach for the keys, just put a sign next to the keys that says, could I walk, you know, or a picture of a tree, whatever
sparks it.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, really simple. And it almost seems too simple, but it's something that I've been trying to do and just saying, hang on a minute, why do I drive to the office? It's over there. You know, I jump on the bike now and it might take 5 minutes more. You know, it's not much.
No.
But just the experience of being outside and being in nature has probably changed you, even to a very, very small degree, more so than just, you know, getting in the car and a positive.
Yeah, again, we got the privilege of being in such a, I walk out my door and I can 5 minutes walk and I'm in the middle of nowhere, really. And we get that advantage. And I do feel for those that are in the middle of an urban landscape and maybe the best they've got is a park, but even getting out to the park and walking amongst trees and taking in that nature is worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you haven't got that nature, then be driven to find it, actually, because I think that's the thing as well. You know, a lot of people that I know sort of during lockdown have sought out actually where their local woods or their local sort of canal path is and you know, so I think there has been a reconnection with nature. It's quite hard to go too far, you know, in a sort of concrete jungle without finding some trees or a park. You know, you can probably find some.
Most cities try to do it sympathetically, don't they? So, yeah. And of course, then I suppose it's always bringing a bit of nature inside.
Exactly. But yeah, if you haven't got enough nature, then, you know, start writing to your MP, you know, take it.
I need more green cover. Come on. What about a recommendation? What should I be reading or watching or looking at?
So I would highly recommend a podcast called Optimism and Outrage. It's off the back of a book that's been written. My mind's gone blank. The future you choose. It's a really upbeat, quite light-hearted podcast. It's been running, I think, for 3 years now, and it's led by Christina Figueres and Tom Rivett-Carnac. Key player, Christina Figueres, in the Paris Agreement. And you'd think that because of that, there's going to be highly sort of political and maybe a bit sort of dour. But actually, it's all about really bringing the two things together and saying, if we look at the problem of climate change and see it as this impossibility and this, you know, negativity, then it's easy to say, well, it's going to happen anyway. It's inevitability. So let's not bother.
Yeah, there is that.
And it's about really harnessing that outrage and saying, this is ridiculous that we're not doing something. You know, the amount of people who are affected by climate change and will continue to be affected by climate change, and driving that outrage and that anger and frustration and using it for action and really believing that collective action will take us somewhere through optimism. So yeah, give it a whirl, Optimism and Outrage.
We'll put a link to that and to their website. Interesting, looks very like a gritty news crew at the top there. Looks quite interesting in their first ones with David Attenborough. So yeah, hats off for being able to get David Attenborough on a podcast, but he is a very inspirational speaker indeed. So I'll have a look at that. So are you ready to answer some fact or fakes?
I'll have a go.
I don't know if I've been cruel or kind to you here, so we'll find out. So first one, 5% of seabird chicks' body weight can be plastic.
Mm-hmm.
5% of seabird chicks' body weight can be plastic.
Can be is a bit of a...
It is, but obviously where they've done testing, they have found chicks that have a proportion of plastic already built in.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably say probably more than that. So, yeah, I would have thought a minimum of 5%, sadly. So
effectively, you're saying that's a fake because it could be more?
Yes.
Okay. You're right, 15. So up to 15% of the body weight of a chick, that's horrendous.
Absolutely terrifying.
Anyway, so moving on to the beloved SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals from the UN. According to their development report, there are only 9 countries on track to hit SDG 14, which is life below water goal for 2030. Is that a fact or a fake? So 9 countries on track to hit SDG 14.
I'd probably say that's a fact.
It's a depressing fact. I'm going to depress you further and say actually it's a fake. There's only 4 countries.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Nicaragua, Colombia, Ecuador, and the United Arab Emirates. So a strange pair of clumpings that were a clump and a standalone. So, okay. All right, so final one, it's 1-1. According to 2015 figures, because there's nothing more recent I can find, between 4.8 and 2.7 million tons of plastic enter the ocean each year.
That's the number again?
For between 4.8 and 12.7 million tons of plastic each year.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, it could be more. It's not going to be less.
So I'd go with your gut feeling and
go a bit
it's
more.
A fact. Yeah. I mean, a big range, because obviously a lot of this is testing and guesswork and mapping it out. But it's just ridiculous, isn't it? You're thinking about, let's say, 10 million tons every year, and that's 5 years ago. I think it's probably going to be a lot worse.
It's a conservative estimate, isn't it?
Probably is. So, congratulations on winning fact or fake, and with that crushing defeat, well, it was 2-1, I'll call it crushing for your benefit. Only leaves me to thank you very much for joining us on the Green Elephant Show, Debbie.
No problem, great to be with you, thank you.
We really hope that you found this special B Corp Month episode both informative and entertaining. Make sure you don't miss any of the 31 interviews with B Corporations who are striving to be a force for good. So make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss a thing, and don't forget to spread the word with others. If you have any questions about being or becoming a B Corp, or any comments and suggestions about the show, please do get in touch. You can email studio@greenelephant.show, or visit the website greenelephant.show, or find us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for Green Elipod or The Green Elephant Show. You can also review the show on Google and Apple Podcasts. Join us tomorrow, and we hope you have a sustainable day.